Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2645, and tonight we're going to have a guest who's never been on before, and she's a survivor, and she's got quite a story to tell, and, you know, so we're looking really forward to having her tell her story. So anyway, it's starting to build now. We're starting to get a panel here, and this is good. A lot of you know who I am. I'm Carol Levine. I'm vice president, and I do run the shows most Friday nights. And, you know, with NASCA, what we do is we work with people, the adults, the child abuse adult victims, as we call them, but they're survivors now, and then they turn into thrivers. That's what they do. And I'm really, really proud to be a part of this organization because I've seen a good change over the years. But I will read the mission statement here, and I'm going to read it right now. Okay, we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay. Actually, we do an awful lot more than that. When I read that statement, it's only like partial because, well, I think it should be updated by God. We do so much. We also have a contact page at any time, so you don't have to feel alone. If you're a survivor of abuse, you need someone to talk to. There are people you can talk to on this contact page. I happen to be a night owl. I speak to people a lot of times in the AM, but we offer so many things. If you go to our website, that's www.NASCA.org, NASCA.org, and that stands for National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, okay, NASCA. And scroll down a little bit, you'll see menus that drop down. And those are red lines, and each one is has, you know, tells you what it is. On the left-hand side are programs, and it goes all the way over. And there's a wealth of information, which I use all the time. When you click open, okay, any one of them, if you want to learn how to speak to your child about child abuse, we have information on that. Prevention, intervention, and recovery is very heavily covered also. Under the highlights is very good. They're all good. So, and we have programs, like I said, which I may or may not talk about tonight. Okay, so we are building a sizable amount of people, but I will give out the number. There's room for two more. 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. A lot of people listen on their computers, yes they do, because they feel bashful about calling in. And you really don't. If you can talk on the phone, you can talk here. It's really that easy. It truly is. So, but anyway, our guest is here, and I'm going to start out. Now, we have a panel, and what we do, Angela, is we go to the panel two or three times, you know, throughout the show, throughout your story. I may ask you to let the panel speak, because maybe they have a question or a comment that they'd like to make or ask, and that it makes it lively, okay, and also educates. We're here to educate people, okay, and it gets their questions answered if they have any. So go ahead, Wayne. If you would like to start now, if you feel a little nervous, take a couple of deep breaths. We're all survivors on this panel. We've all seen it all. We've all been through it all, and we're right here for you. Okay, so go ahead and start out and tell us your story. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Carol. Honestly, I didn't realize that my abuse was abuse until I was much older. I grew up in a household where there was mental, emotional, physical, and sexual abuse going on, and I didn't. I thought that a lot of it was normal. All the physical and mental and emotional abuse, I really thought it was normal, and that's what happened in other people's homes. I never talked about it as a child outside of my home because I thought that that's what everybody else's house was like. And then when I was about, I would say about 26 years old, I really started to slow down and work because I was a complete workaholic. Everything I did was about escaping the pain that I didn't understand that I actually had. But then I started to slow down with my work and had more time on my hands. And then things started to completely unravel. I started to learn that the things that were going on in my house, like mental abuse, you know, just the things that I was told growing up, emotional abuse. One of the biggest things that I remember being told that really shut me down was, I don't care about your feelings. Your feelings don't matter. You're not allowed to have them in this house. And so it kind of carried on as an adult, and I was very numb and had to really relearn all of that. But what happened when I was going through that period of time where everything started to slow down, I really did sink into a depression and really started to get suicidal. I never went through with it. I never actually did something, but the thoughts and thinking about it all the time definitely was there. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, I decided that I couldn't do this anymore, and I reached out to a friend and told him, you know, what was going on. And he's a combat veteran, so he was pretty familiar with PTSD and those things. And he was very familiar with what I was going through, and he was just there. He was just kind of waiting for me to say something. And when I finally said something, it changed everything for me, I feel like. And I started to open up about what was going on. I started to open up about what was going on in my childhood. And I really started to journal. Journaling helped me a huge deal. It actually helped me a lot when I was a child. I was a pretty depressed child, and I never understood why. And I turned to journaling to help me, and I did the same thing when that moment took place. I went back to it and really started to journal and really started to get clear on the things that were happening in my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 2 years after that point, memories and flashbacks came in of my sexual abuse that was taking place by my stepdad at the time. And I thought that I was okay. I really did. I thought that I was okay. I really, truly believed that nothing in my childhood really impacted me, even though I understood that the the mental abuse that was going on did impact me in that time, but I just thought, oh, that sexual abuse doesn't hurt me. That didn't do anything to me. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that it did. It totally and completely impacted my life. It made sense the way that I was as a teenager. I was very promiscuous. You know, when I got older than that, 21, 22, I really got good at manipulating men and making them do whatever I wanted. And I thought it was like the best thing that ever happened because I wanted to hurt them before they hurt me. And so there was just all these cycles that I went through with men all the time. And all of that started to make sense. And when I remembered that, I thought it was okay. And then about a year later, when I was still kind of healing, still kind of, you know, scratching the surface of things, starting to become more self-aware of the things that I do and the cycles that I continued as a child into my adult life, I started to date someone. And I stayed the night at his house, and I didn't think that anything was going to happen. And I was in this position where I was so used to being in this position that I was in with him that I was afraid to speak up and I was afraid to say no. And I never gave him an indication that I wanted it to stop. But it totally and completely changed my life forever because I ended up pregnant with my daughter. And then that's what catapulted me into, you've got to figure this out right now because this cycle is not repeating. You can't do this. You can't continue to act like you're fine. And so when I was pregnant, I did the brunt of all of my healing from, I learned that when I was growing up, I would get physically beat and then the sexual abuse would happen. I would, I used to get beat with this large encyclopedia Bible. So then I had this, you know, this conflict with God, especially when I was growing up and learning to unheal and do all these things. And I started to realize the impact of what was going on in my childhood really had changed who I was as a person and the way that I thought and the way that I treated other people and the way that I treated myself. And the impact of it at when I was healing just it's unspeakable. Sometimes I feel like it's indescribable to be able to explain all the things that had happened that got me to that point that I decided that it was time to, you know, kind of break this cycle. And as I've healed more and more, things have started to come up, like memories and flashbacks and dreams. And a lot of it was about, you know, a dominance thing. And I remember that I would black out before everything happened. So it took me a while to really accept that that's really what happened because I didn't have vivid details. I didn't have vivid details actually until maybe a few months ago. I'd say about maybe 3 months ago, things really started to come in. And it was really hard to accept the truth of it at the beginning because I didn't really know. And I'm glad that I never talked myself out of believing that it was true. But the things that happened when I was a child was just indescribable. I was actually talking about it with a group of women the other day that I was a sassy little girl. I was a really strong-willed girl. And, you know, my parents tried to beat that out of me. And one time I was talking back to the same man that was molesting me, and he put Tabasco sauce in my mouth and made me hold it in there. And when I was growing up, the smell of it always made me sick, and I didn't understand why until, of course, I got older and started to heal all this stuff. But it would be so triggering that it would make me completely sick. I'd have to leave the room. Now it's not as bad, but I just would remember certain things like that and didn't understand where they were coming from or why it was happening. But now I have pretty much a full gist of what was going on, and there was just a lot of abuse going on in my house. If you name it, it was probably happening.
Right.
So that's,
let's stop for a second.
That's
here.
It.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay. Well, you know, we have an hour and a half, and we certainly will discuss your story. And I'm so sorry you had to go through all of that. I giggled a little bit when you said the sauce at the basket. So I had that put in my mouth too. And it burns. Whoa.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you tear. It makes you burn.
Yep.
And it makes you even madder. I remember I became really angry. And I wanted to bite someone or something. I don't know. You know. But,
right.
Yeah. You know, you see, you're on a show where all this abuse, which is so horrific, and many times it is just so horrific. One time is too many, but when it happens repeatedly, of course, the post-traumatic stress comes in. And with the post-traumatic stress, it can come in all different flavors, if you want to put it that way. You know, with me, it was terrible panic, which took over my life, and it turned into panic disorder, which turned into agoraphobia. But I'd like to shop really bad, and that got me out of the house, okay? I wasn't going to let that stop me.
Right.
But the panic attack started when I was 9 and lasted until I was 49. But that's my story a little bit, just a touch, just to let you know that when we are so horribly abused, whether it be sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally, or neglected, or all of them, okay, we go through all this many times, unfortunately. And, you know, we do not, you know, it does damage to your spirit, your brain, mm-hmm. The way that you feel about life, the way you feel about people. And it's a very hard journey that people do get on. Now, I do see from here, from looking at your bio, that you're also a coach and an author. We will get back to that. But right now, let me go through the panel here. Okay, we have Adrian. She's from Philly, and she's here. So her mic is already open. Adrian would like to say hello to our guest. Oh, no, it's not open. Thought it was open. Sorry about that. Now it's open. Go ahead. Adrian?
Yes. Hi.
Yeah, would you like to say hello? Go ahead, maybe. Go ahead.
Hello. I have a question. From the period when you said you were young until 26 years of age, you said things were going. Did you ever have any therapy or anything? And do you have a good support group right now since it's been about 3 months, you said?
So I didn't have a therapist until about 2 years after the flashbacks had come in when I was pregnant. And the flashbacks have come in a while ago. So I'm 34 now. So it was a while ago that the first set of flashbacks had come in. I do have an amazing support team with me. I do not currently go to therapy. When I went to therapy, when I was doing the brunt of my healing, I didn't feel like it was the right fit for me. I was doing some other stuff that I felt like was more beneficial for me.
Okay. Good to know.
All righty. Thank you for that, Adrian. Let's go down to Darlene from Alabama. Okay, I'm going to open up her mic. Okay, there we go. It's twirling around. There we go. You there, Darlene? Darlene? I guess she's not there. Where'd you go? Maybe she has her mic off. Sometimes that happens. Okay, I'll get back to her. Let's go down to our founder. Okay, this is Bill Murray, and he's from California. He is the founder of NASCA, and also he created the recovery groups that you see on our website, the www.nasca.org. And so anyway, here he is. Okay, hello, Bill. How you doing?
I'm great, Carol. Thank you for running the show tonight, and thanks to our guests for coming on and telling her story. I really appreciate that, of course. I'm
thank you.
You're quite welcome. I'm interested in clarifying for our listeners, because we really do these shows for the newcomer who may not be as well informed, that not everybody needs flashbacks, but a lot of us get them. In other words, sort of memories that we've repressed in our attempt to survive as children. We don't remember them maybe in our 20s and so forth. A lot of people. Now, some do. I remembered everything. But on the other hand, I know that there are lots of people who will be what we call triggered by something, a taste, a smell, a sound. Those all can be a story. Maybe they're watching a movie and something triggers them, whatever it is, and it'll bring back, or maybe the encounter with a person that they haven't seen in years, and when they are in that person's presence, you know, perhaps they recall that was one of their predators, you know, for example. The point is that we're not all cookie cutters as far as our backgrounds, but there's so much similarity in our backgrounds that whenever somebody shares, I know that even though I don't have that exact experience, I'm going to hear stuff during your telling of your story that I will identify with a great deal. And so this is it. I mean, we just want the newcomer to sit back and identify with what you can, and if you can't, that's okay. But believe her when she says that these things, you know, do happen, because in my experience, once a survivor has crossed the threshold of the willingness to tell their story, they're eager to tell it. I mean, after all, for some of us, it's been a couple of decades since, you know, we've had the secret inside of us and more. So I really appreciate your coming on tonight. And thank you for talking about having memories come back to you and then starting your healing journey from that point.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. And I feel like those moments are critical to do something with, because if we have the memories and we let them sit, then sometimes they'll really do start to eat at us. And so I feel like it's a pivotal moment to start moving forward.
Very good. We often say we're as sick as our secrets. And of course the reverse of that is true. We're kind of as healed as our willingness to tell our secrets, you know? So giving up the secrets is really, really important, and giving them up to the right group. So you are doing that tonight, obviously. You're talking to a bunch of fellow survivors. That's always okay to do. But don't, if you're a newcomer, be surprised if you try and tell your story to the wrong people, and it won't be accepted the way we will always accept your story. So come on and get involved with NASCA, because you won't be rejected. You'll be welcomed with open arms.
Yes, you will. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for that, Bill. And that's so true. You know, people, people don't want to hear about child abuse. There's so many that don't want to hear about child abuse. They're so quick to look the other way. Don't you agree with that, Angela? And, you know, that's a darn shame, because those children that are being abused, they need for us to help them, you know. So part of the show is a lot of times on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'll be on some Thursdays also. But one thing we do stress to people is that if you suspect that a child is being abused, and in urban areas it's about every fourth or fifth house, there's something going on. I mean, that's just stats. These are studies that have been done. For God's sake, if you know of it, you know, report it, please. And you can call the 1-800-4-A-CHILD number. I always tell people to call them. They're nationally known, and it's actually Child Help. And that way, if you don't want to, you know, deal with the people in your own area, you can call them. And they will help. They'll have other people sent out and so forth. They'll make the phone calls or give you other numbers to call. So it's very important that, you know, children are better looked after, because we have so many kids that commit suicide and everything else. It's horrific. Now, let's get back to your story. You had all kinds of problems. You thought that it stopped at the age of 7 or 8, but then you go on to say that you were, again, raped at the age 27. Was that still the same person, or was that who was that?
No, that was actually a different incident from a family friend that I thought I was actually in my house and thought that I was safe in my bed, and then it took place and I was not. At that point, the flashbacks from my childhood had been so repressed that I didn't know that that had happened at all. I didn't know that I had been abused at that point, but I was attacked again at 19 and at 26.
Oh, my. Okay. So you had quite a few different abuses. This happens.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it happens far too much. Yes, it does. When you were a kid going to school, just out of curiosity, because everybody handles things differently, but did you by any chance, were you able to make friends? Did you have, were friends allowed to come over to your house? What was going on with that?
So I did have friends. Looking back on it now as an adult, I think I had very many friends, and the friends that I did have, I wasn't very close to them. I do always remember feeling different from everybody else. But people, I mean, people were allowed to come to the house. You know, everything seemed pretty much normal from the outside. There was a lot of, I guess you could say, role playing going on. You know, where everybody was wearing a mask and just pretended that everything was fine and we were this normal family. So, you know, from the outside, everything looked completely fine. Everybody seemed to keep proper, I don't know, proper roles, I guess you could say. But I didn't understand until much later that, you know, that's not really what was going on. But I did have friends. Like I said, I really did play with the boys a lot. I was a tomboy for a very long time. I think actually right around 7 was when I stopped wearing dresses, and all of a sudden I hated pink, and I was the hardest. My mom would tell me all the time, you're so hard to shop for. You don't like anything anymore. And so I, you know, I decided that I wanted to be like a boy and hang out with the boys and do that. So I really had a lot of friends that were boys until I got a little bit older, and then I just always felt different from the girls that I was friends with.
Yeah, well, we go through this, you know, a lot of times, you know, in school and so forth. How were you academically? Were you able to concentrate?
I was a terrible student until fourth grade, and then things changed. I don't know, something like clicked and things changed, and then I became an overperformer. So and then academically, I was pretty much fine, unless I wanted my mom's attention, and then, you know, I'd fail class, and then that's when I would get her attention.
Right, yeah. So would you say you and your mother were close or not? It sounds like there was a little distance there.
We were not close when I was growing up. Now is a very different story. But growing up, I wanted nothing to do with her. I didn't want to be like her. I didn't want to, you know, I hated that I had to live with her. I wanted to go live with my dad, who lived in a different state than she did. You know, I hated being there.
Yeah, that happens so often. Okay. So what would you like to add to this? Now, it says, I didn't really understand any of the abuse until I was much older. When I look back on it, when I had gotten older, I just thought it was normal that people grew up with their mothers like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, isn't it awful? You know, you know, it's awful when you're living in the house with your mother. I mean, did you tell your mother? Did you try to tell your mother? I mean, did you speak about this abuse that was going on with the, you know, the man that she married, as you have it written here, the man that she married? Go ahead.
With the flashbacks that have come back in within the last 3 months or so, I did try to say that I was. I did try to speak up. I spoke up about it at school. I spoke up about it at different places, but I was always, you know, I was just told that I was always lying. And even as a kid, before, or not before the abuse, but I would get in trouble a lot for always lying, and I didn't ever remember what I was lying about. I was just always told, you're always lying, you're always lying. So I think that I was getting punished for always lying, but I don't think I was actually lying. I think that I was just told that I was lying so that I would stop saying these things.
Right. Now, your mother, I'm seeing things here that are very similar, like in my case and a lot of people's cases, you know. They usually have one parent, maybe both parents, you know, that they have a problem with. Once in a while, we'll get someone on who actually got along very well with their parents, but still, I know they didn't believe them. You know, there's things like that. You know, and, you know, it's very hard living with your mother, who's supposed to love and nurture you and all this other stuff, and guide you, for a little girl especially, okay, to not have that girl time, you know, with her mother, to go out and go shopping together like you were talking about. Well, you were changing as far as, you know, what clothing you liked and so forth, and she was giving you, you know, showing anger at that. That's a very hard thing to live with if you don't have a good relationship with your mother. So often, you know, they pick the person who is the abuser over the child. And you must have felt like that, because you said that you had tried telling certain people and you opened up your mouth here and there and spoke about it, but you were always the liar, okay, or the child who wasn't being truthful, or maybe you don't remember correctly, whatever, which wording they used. And that just makes you feel even worse inside, because you're not being validated. No one's hearing you. No one's listening to you. And so many of us on NASCA do go through that. My mother knew exactly what was going on, and I have a big mouth. And, you know, I told people that's just the way I was. And no one cared. And with my mother, she'd say to me, well, that happens in families, okay? And that was the end of it, you know, because my brother was abusing me. Yeah. And I had lived in a pedophile house before that, you know. And she, you know, craziness. But, you know, children many times are put second or third or fourth or fifth, whatever, you know. And then because, again, the mother, you know, chooses the lover, or in your case, this man would be your stepdad, correct?
Yes.
She married him. Yeah. And, you know, so she chose him over you. Do you think that any time during the ages of 3 years old or 4 years old, that she suspected that he was, you know, hurting you?
I feel like, and I want to say this because being a mother now, I feel like there had to be some there had to be some evidence, right? Because I started peeing the bed constantly. I started wetting the bed all the time. I started peeing my pants all the time, and I didn't want to get in trouble. So then I would go and take my panties and hide them in my panty drawer so that I wouldn't get in trouble. And so those things started to take place. And so I imagine that, you know, as a mom, that would be weird to me if my daughter was doing something like that all of a sudden after, you know, we didn't have any problems potty training or wetting the bed or anything like that. So from a mother's perspective, I feel like there was, but I can't, you know, as a child being in that situation, I don't know. So, but I do feel like there was definitely evidence that was there that could have been seen, that there was something going on.
And you see, that even makes you have more anger towards your mother. A lot of us have mother issues. I had mother issues. She went to her grave, I still had mother issues. You know, I mean, you know, when your child is being, you know, sexually abused, and the mother doesn't, you know, comes out with stupid remarks like mine did, or just turns her head the other way and doesn't, listen or calls you a liar or whatever, you know, that came out of her mouth. Now, you see, that makes for many times a child who becomes very tough. I became tough. Or you become very inward and meek. But you were able to make friends, and that's. But they weren't. You had boundaries as to how far those friendships, I think, would go, from what you were saying. Like they were your friends, but they were just sort of like friends. Like there was no real true relationships with them. So that shows already
right.
that you're having problems. Yes, with relationships, at a very early age. And why wouldn't you? Okay. Many times we find out people on NASCA have terrible problems with, you know, relationships because of the situations that we go through. You know, this is a
right.
part of being, you know, sexually abused. So let me see what else you have here. And it says here, recovery means everything to her. Now, we have quite a bit of time left. I'm going to go to the panel and see if they have any questions. I'm going to go to Adrian. I start at the top and work my way down. So, Adrian, do you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make with what you've heard so far?
I just think that you handling everything very well. And I just I'm encouraged in to see the way things are working out and you're moving forward in life. And it's just encouraging. I have to give you, props for everything that's going on and that you even came on the show and talking about everything.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you. I truly appreciate that. And I'm happy to do that because if my story can encourage somebody else to move forward or inspire them to move forward, then that's what matters.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I agree with that. Yeah, Adrian, that's true. You know, so often when it's in the family, it seems like it's easier to talk about abuse outside of the family, okay? And even though he was your stepdad, not your bio dad, he was still your dad, okay? So it's many times people don't even want to talk about it because maybe they've been warned, you better keep your mouth shut, or... Okay, or or they're embarrassed. You know, they don't want people to know the family secrets within the household, things like that. And you did try to speak about it, and yet your voice was not heard. And that's something that we speak a lot about on NASCA. You know, hear my voice, hear my voice. I'm sure there are books with titles made by that. You know, hear my voice, hear my cry. I know there's one, hear my cry. I'm panic child for obvious reasons because, again, from 9 to 49, so that was a good long time to suffer from panic disorder. Let's go down to Darlene. Now, it's written down here, Darlene. Darlene, are you there? Oh, Darlene. She must be on mute or something. I don't know. I don't understand that. She's here. This isn't Roberta, is it? No, not Roberta. It's,
yeah.
I don't know. Okay. Who is this?
It's Roberta.
Oh, you should have said something, you silly girl. I figured the 409, it was either Darlene or you. So, all right, okay. It was written down, Darlene. Okay. Sorry about that. You've heard quite a bit of what she's had to say. Do you have a question that you have or maybe a comment?
Well, I have a comment and a question, and please, if I breathe in the phone too hard, please let me know.
Oh, I'll let you know, because that's what those
okay.
nuts do. They go, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. But, first I want to make a comment. I can relate to a lot she had to say, Angela, and that I can relate to a lot you had to say. I don't know my whole story yet. Because I don't know why, but, but I do know that when you talk about indescribable things, and I'm aware of that, and I'm prepared for it, and when it comes up, and, more of it, and there's just too many offenders, too many years, too many households, too many forms of abuse, and too many offices, and, it's just too much sometimes, but I just have a comment. I have a question. Did you ever, any time in your depression, did you feel like you were in a dark place and you're either going to lose your mind or lose your life?
I felt like when I was depressed, I was probably just lose my life because I was a very functioning depressed person. So I owned a house at the time. I got up for work every morning. I would go to work. No one would know that I was, you know, in this place at work, and I'd come home and I'd just watch TV, and then I would sleep for like 12 hours, and then I would binge drink during the weekend, and no one had any idea because I had such a front. So I feel like I was going to take my life, or I was going to put myself in a position where I was going to get killed. So it was going to be either one for me. And that's where I was at the time. And nobody had any idea except for my one friend who was the combat veteran.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're
for
welcome.
That, Roberta. Yeah, now she opened up some things to talk about here a little bit more. Because so often, many times, not all the time, but many times of us do turn to alcohol and drugs. Bill and I certainly did. I've been sober since 1981. Wow. I still want to drink, though. You know, I just don't. I'm a good girl. I haven't slipped yet. No, I haven't. So you would save your drinking, and I know people that do this, okay? They wait until the weekend. And they figure, well, mm-hmm. I can drink. I worked all week long. I did this and I did that. And then when the weekend comes, holy Christopher, and you don't know if you want to be in the same house with them. I know about that. And then others, I used to drink and pop pills. I shouldn't be here. And both of them were downers. You know, I mean, alcohol is a downer. People don't realize that. You get giddy, you get laughy, and then all of a sudden, you know. And that's where it comes down to being, you know, a downer. And I used to pop Quaaludes too, and sometimes I do it together. Oh, God wants me here, okay? With the suicidal, many of us are suicidal who have been suicidal. I'm not suicidal anymore. Now I love myself. Yes, I do. And took a long time to get there, though, okay? You know, I just simply had to learn that this is how it was, this is how it is, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow. But it took me a long time to get there, to get to that place. Let's go down to Bill. Bill, your mic is open. Go ahead. You have something to say, I'm sure.
Well, first of all, I want to apologize to Roberta. Someone had entered Darlene's name there before I called in, so I left it alone and didn't realize it was Roberta, so I apologize, Roberta.
it's okay.
Yeah, I know. I know it's okay. So I have a question about her experience, but I also have a comment about my own. And that, I'll do my comment first. The first comment will be quick. You know, I tried to tell about my abuse when I was a freshman in high school, at the very beginning of freshman year. And I tried to tell it to somebody who should have taking care of me about it, who was a psychologist, a Roman Catholic priest, and I did it in a confession. So you know how they talk about kids need to divulge and they need to tell their secrets? Well, I did so because I had been abused for 3 years already by the time I was whatever you are as a freshman, like 14 or something. But I told somebody who himself was a predator, and I didn't know that. Now, that means that I first divulged to kind of appropriate authority at 14 years old. And I didn't get help until I was 30 in a completely different, you know, kind of group. But boy, when we try to tell, I mean, I often hear Carol say, it's really bad when it's probably worse when you are abused by your family. Well, I wasn't. But in effect, when you're Catholic, as Catholic as I am, it's an entire community that's letting you down, a community that you've been brought up to believe, you know, will protect you and guide you and take care of you and so forth. So anyway, the question I have about your experience is, I think it was Adrian asked you in the previous round of comments whether you had had therapy, and you indicated that you had started to do some therapy, but then you didn't find it very effective, so you went on to do something else. So my question is, can you tell us a little bit about the something else that you found and why it was effective for you? Because we don't have a plan for people to follow. There's lots of different ways they can, you know, heal, and lots of different paths. So since it wasn't therapy, can you tell us a little bit about what it was, please?
Sure, sure. And first, before I answer that, I actually want to comment about being Catholic. My family is very Catholic, and we actually have nuns and priests in our family, and so we understand feeling like you're let down by a community that was supposed to protect you and they were supposed to be there for you, because you expect that because that's what you grew up in. And so I completely understand what you're saying when you confess to the priest and then he was the predator. So I understand that situation completely, because you do expect that from your church. You expect them to be there for you. And then some, they fail to do the same thing, just like your family did or didn't do, depending on the situation. But as far as my other healing goes, when I had my flashbacks, I was really getting into personal development. And so I was actually following someone on Facebook that I had been drawn to. And I didn't know why at the time. But when I was pregnant, I started having these weird dreams about dying. I didn't understand what they were. I had woke up actually in my bed face down on my pillow and couldn't breathe. And I was actually having a dream that I was suffocating, and I would continue to have these dreams about dying. And I just didn't understand why they were coming in. And so I reached out to this lady and told her what was going on. And she said, you know, I want you to journal on these questions. And I don't know what the journaling questions were at all now, but I just remember feeling like these questions brought so much into awareness. And I had told her a little bit about my situation and what was going on. And she said, you know what, I can help you. I can help you. And I had no idea what I was getting into. For whatever reason, I just said, yes, yes, I will start working with you, and I will do whatever you guide me to do. And I did the work, and she's actually a soul shaman. So it's very, a lot of it is very spiritual, but a spiritual awakening is just more self-awareness. And so she really helped me become self-aware and really helped me start to dive deep into figuring out who I was, all this self-awareness, really helping me learn to heal the trauma that had taken place. She was maybe the second person that I had told in my entire life at that point knowingly, because I didn't know that I had actually told people when I was a child. So at that point, she was the second person that I had told knowingly about my sexual abuse. And then she just really helped me uncover all of these things that I felt like I needed to learn to be able to, you know, respond to life. Because even if you feel that you're healed and let this go, things still happen during life that can trigger you or do all these things. So I felt like I was really equipped with the right tools and resources. I did go to therapy for a year, and I felt like it was great to talk to somebody, but I didn't feel like I was getting the tools and resources out of it like I was getting from my soul shaman. And I also did timeline therapy, and timeline therapy is just helping you release experiences unconsciously.
unconsciously and subconsciously, so it helps you rewire your mind. And then I also did mind transformation, which is more of a mindset, more of a mindset coaching program, if you will. And that's where I learned about NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming. And that's just the way you speak and the way you perceive the world. And it helps you shift that, so you speak about yourself better, but you also speak into, you know, the universe more positive things, so that you attract more of that into your life. And then I learned to I did more timeline therapy during that time as well, and I just really learned how to strive after things that I really wanted in my life with that part of the coaching.
Mm-hmm. Gina,
and that's what I've done.
Yeah, you just listed a whole bunch of tools and exercises and you know, and this is what NASCA wants to encourage, that people don't get stuck in any one path, because there are so many, and there's even more than, you know, you just listed. So whether you want to do, if you want to do EMDR, do it, you know. If you want to do animal therapy, do it. If you want to do, if you're into ministry and you trust your, you know, you trust your minister or whoever it is, do it. If you believe in life coaching, do it. You know, whatever. But there are many paths, is the point, and a lot of tools. And we don't tell people what they have to do. So I really appreciate you going down the list of what you've done and you're doing. I'm sure some of it has influenced, and we'll learn later, how it is that you work with others, because I know you do coach too. So I really, I'm glad I asked that question, because I had a feeling there was something a little different about your process, which there was. And, you know, congratulations. I mean, you sound like you're doing great.
Thank you.
Yeah, she absolutely is. And you're so right. We don't tell people what to do, where to get their help from on this show. But we do, and, you know, encourage certainly that people, you know, go and get help. Otherwise, you stay in the same place, you know. And I've heard so much about EMDR and some of the other things that you were speaking about. You know, whatever it is that helps you, whether it be with a therapist who understands child abuse, it has to be someone who understands child abuse, absolutely. Otherwise, you're wasting each other's time and you're losing maybe a lot of money. I don't know. They can charge a lot if you don't have insurance. So, you know, whatever it is, or going to a coach is enough for some people, you know, a lot of people, and, you know, so forth. Mine came from counselors, and I'm Catholic also. I found a really good Catholic church. Yeah, I really did. And they truly helped me. We had a huge prayer group. And quite frankly, they came from all walks of life. And so there were counselors there, and they were able to help me. And it gave me a battery of tests. I wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy, because I've been told that I was crazy, you know, as I was growing up. And all this other stuff. And, no, my God, they helped me. I did that for about 2 years, a little bit, maybe 2.5 years. And then they say, Carol, you don't have to come back anymore. You're fine. And let me tell you something. When I walked out of that office, because they had in town, they had their offices, but I felt that was the biggest high I'd ever had. You know, they helped me so much that, and just knowing that I wasn't nuts helped me so much. And it right. was okay to have certain feelings, because we as survivors know, and we can look back certainly upon our own lives, you know, that we went through terrible feelings, you know, the terrible depression, feeling worthless, feeling less than, the low self-esteem, all of which go together, feeling unlovable. Because if you're, you know, you're not validated, people don't listen to you, they push you away, you know, and you're not really a part of the family, and so forth and so on, it doesn't give you a good foundation, okay? You have nothing to grow up with. You don't have parents you can go to. and you don't have other family members even, because in those days especially everything was pushed under the rug. And I remember when we'd have our family gatherings, and I wouldn't even want to be there next to my brother. Oh my God, he was one of them. And that terrible uncle in the pedophile house, he wasn't a part of that family, so I didn't have to see him anyway. But I remember a swinging door, and on the other side of the swinging door, the adults would gather, and they'd go, and they're talking. And a lot of times I'd be the subject matter, which really made me mad. Okay, so one day I had my ear up against the door because I wanted to hear what they were saying. Well, someone pushed on the other side, and I went flying. Oh, my God. But, I could hear because they already knew of my abuse in the pedophile house, and they kept talking about me, but they wouldn't help me. They wouldn't help me. So, that's a sad thing when children are not listened to. Mm-hmm. They're not listened to. So we grow up like that. Let's start talking. First of all, you do have a book that you've written. I see here that you are an author. Tell us about your book.
Sure. My book is really a journal. And mm-hmm. It was actually when I wrote that when I was pregnant. And it was questions that I had worked through personally. And I had already been blogging about my experience because I had owned my business but didn't really know what I was doing with it. So I was blogging about my experience, so I decided that I was going to share these journal prompts that I felt like helped me heal more. They helped me recover more from my childhood abuse. And so I actually wrote those questions, work through them myself, and then when I decided to publish it and put it out there, because you can do that on your own through Amazon, I had figured out how mm-hmm. to do it, I actually mm-hmm. shared some of my journal entries in the book, and then also kind of did some explaining about the journal prompts and why I felt like they were critical to answer and how they can help. And I did that, and it's actually been received pretty well. I'm pretty mm-hmm. proud of that. And when I look at it now, I've evolved into a completely different person. But I just still feel like even still to this day, it's the perfect place to start. If anybody has never ever told anybody, never wanted to go to therapy or do any of that, I just feel like the journal was the perfect place to start to open that up and open up the door and start exploring that and help release some of the things, the secrets that we were talking about earlier, and just start to get those in the open, even if it's just admitting it to yourself that these things have taken place. So I wrote that journal in a very vulnerable state, I feel like, but I'm also very proud of that journal.
Okay. And it's written here, now she's a breakthrough coach and a blogger. So breakthrough, explain breakthrough. Is that like getting through, the things that you go through as a person who's a survivor of sexual abuse or physical abuse, mental abuse? What do you mean by breakthrough coach?
So breakthrough is about being able to break through the chains of the past, because sometimes mm-hmm. we feel like we are chained to the past no matter what happens or what we try to do. So that is just about breaking through the chains of the past. And most of the women that I work with, they do have sexual abuse because they hear my story and I do talk about it. But a lot of the women in my group, they have trauma of all sorts. They come from all walks of life, these women. So I just use breakthrough coach because I want it to be about breaking through the past.
Right. I like that. You see, so often, like, domestic violence doesn't get spoken about enough, okay? And
right.
I remember that. We all do, many of us here on the panel, or we know someone, many of us, know people who went through horrific domestic violence as a child, watching mommy and daddy, right? And and then later on, what do? What kind of people do we pick? Many times we pick, I hope this isn't your case, but many times you pick people who are abusive, and just like daddy was or mommy was. It can't be mommy who's abusive. We don't speak enough about that, okay? Yeah. And so it just, children go through so much in life that they observe. Even if you're a child that observes domestic violence, that too can cause PTSD, okay? Yeah. Anything that's trauma, okay, trauma-related. In fact, they actually say that PTSD with, you know, children who are going through PTSD, people who are going through PTSD, is the same as being on the front line in the service. You know, when guys are out there and they're on the front line, they put the two together as being equally the same as maybe to damage and, you know, what the mind sees and how it affects the mind and the trauma part, you know. So trauma is trauma, okay? And it doesn't matter whether it's physical, whether it's mental, whether it's emotional, or whether it's sexual, because it's all trauma. You know, and it affects us so horribly in our lives. A lot of our vets do commit suicide, unfortunately, but then so do a lot of, you know, so do a lot of kids. I tried to commit suicide. I tried really hard. That sounds funny, but I have my mother on one side, my stepfather on the other. And my mother was telling me to do it and do it a good job. I was cutting my wrist. And my stepfather was just standing there going, yeah, yeah. Because he was Danish, and that's how he said yes. So, you know, this is all terrible trauma, you know, for a child. And I actually stopped cutting for a second there and looked at them, and I thought, my God, what kind of monsters are these that they would stand there and do that, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It was, you know, and years ago, Coke bottles were made out of glass. They didn't have plastic ones, and that's all I had to work with was a piece of glass. So, and it was thick. It wasn't doing a good job. Let's put it that way. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not going to go into the rest of it, but I was saved, and not certainly by them. So, yes, this is what we do. So the women that you work with, because you had mentioned also, too, I think it was it Adrian? I think it was Adrian, had asked you, you know, if you had thought, too, of, you know, suicide. You had mentioned, too, that at one point that you'd rather be dead, for God's sake, than go through. You were at that state of mind where you're down in that rut so low where it doesn't look like there is any life. I mean, what is life? All we know is being abused. And because all of these nightmares you were having and, the, you know, all the bad dreams and nightmares and the awareness of just how severe. And then also, too, being sexually abused again. I think you said when you were 19 and then again at, what was it, 27. You had mentioned a couple other years in there also. Yeah. And that does a job on a person's mind and on their spirit and just your overall being,
Yes.
Okay. So I commend you, too, for all the, as far as you've gotten in your life on your journey. You've been able to go down the journey, you know, and do wonderful things. And you're more at peace with yourself today. You know who you are, right? You probably, you know, still, and you still probably, you can go backwards a little bit, though. You know, when you're, I don't care if you're a coach, I don't care if you're a psychiatrist, I don't care what you are. When you go through abuse and like we've gone through that trauma, you can go a little bit backwards, and then you go forwards again, backwards and forwards. And it's always good to have a therapist or someone that you can speak to, because the healing journey is not an easy thing to go through either, okay? It's one step at a time, okay? And one thought that needs to be straightened out at a time and one action. But I always say we're still standing. That's what we are. We're still standing. Let me go to the panel here. And see if Adrian has any questions or a comment that she would like to make. Go ahead, Adrian.
No, I don't have any more comments. I just want to say thank you.
Okay. And then let's go down then to Roberta. Roberta, is there something you'd like to ask her or talk about?
Yes. I know in my life, because I had early childhood abuse, and I had abuse in my teenage years, and I had abuse in my adult years. And did you have a hard time understanding, like, the difference between child and adult, and another question I have can you have relationships now, and are you able to have relationships?
Sure. It wasn't hard for me to understand the timeline of my childhood abuse and my adult abuse when it took place when I was a teenager and then later on into adulthood. But as an adult, it was very hard to connect back to my child self because that's where a lot of healing has taken place for me. I have had a hard time really connecting with my child self. I struggle with playing. Even with my daughter, who's almost 3 years old, I really struggle to play with her. So I really have to practice being present and practice connecting with her and being with her. And so I've kind of struggled with really, really going back to that childhood, even though I was a nanny for a very long time and I could play with other people's kids like it was no big deal. But when it came to playing with my child, it was like I was stuck, or, you know, I didn't know what to do. So some of that childhood stuff has really gotten lost for me as an adult. But it's also helpful because I do have a little girl that I get to see the innocence and the childhood that I never got to have as a child. So it's kind of, it's different. I wish I would be able to go back to being a childhood very easily, but it hasn't worked that well for me. But that's just, as you know, it's just part of the process that I've had to deal with, and I work on it every day. As far as relationships go, I do have relationships. I am much better at being a friend and connecting and being vulnerable and opening up and telling people when I need help. As far as having healthy relationships with men, that's been interesting to say the least. I actually have a boyfriend who I'm currently breaking up with because the relationship is not healthy. And so I've had to navigate that in a way different way than, say, I would like 7 years ago. But I do believe that I can have relationships with men, whether they're platonic or whether they're romantic. You know, I do believe that it is possible to have a healthy relationship and even have that intimacy, be open, be vulnerable, and have those things. I just haven't found the right person yet.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that. Yeah, thank you for that, Roberta. That was really good. What you were referring to was the wounded child within. That's what you're having problems with. And there is a book out there which is very good. It's by Robert Burney. And it is through having the courage and willingness to revisit the emotional dark night of the soul that was our childhood that we can start to understand on a gut level why we have lived our lives as we have. Now, your life, as it turns out, I mean, you did quite well. I mean, you had a lot of problems in the sense of, you know, you have remembrances finally that came back and then nightmares and the flashbacks and all this other stuff, which is very common, okay, with those of us who have been abused. Anyway, always, which ways, it doesn't matter. It's trauma. And when you say that you had problems, you know, dealing, you know, with your own child. And we, you know, our childhood was robbed from us. That's what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you feel a sadness, a true sadness, because, hey, I wanted to go out and play. I wanted to do this. I wanted to do that.
Right.
And a lot of times, you know, I couldn't, and I'm sure you couldn't either. There were, things were different. And yet we couldn't quite, as a child, put our finger on it and say, well, this is not right. And I'm meaning saying not right. There's a problem in this house because we're too young. We don't understand.
Right.
And, you know, so it's very hard when, you know, you live a life like that. And then I remember looking very envious at other kids and other families, and I was passing around that I was adopted, Bill. Yes, I did. I felt so distant. I was like, I got caught. I felt so distant from my family that, you know, I think he's laughing. I felt so distant from my family. I was in this when I was 14, thank you very much, that I didn't want to be a part of that family anyway. And they treated me like I was a piece of dirt on the bottom of my shoe, so I must be adopted or something. Something's wrong here, okay? There's something wrong here. So, you know, when there's that distance in the family and you're not accepted, your voice isn't heard. I did find out that my so-called bio father was not my father. And my mother had been raped, and therefore I was a child who wasn't wanted, and that's why I was treated distantly and you know, and differently. So I didn't find that out until, you know, well into my adulthood, okay? So, but I didn't, I always knew that I was different, and I didn't look like them anyway. And you know what? I'm glad I didn't. Look at some of them, or whatever. But anyway, so, but you know, as a breakthrough coach, okay, this is what you are. How do people get a hold of you? And say they want to speak to a coach. They want to be with other women. Say they want to be with other women. Do you allow men in your group, or is it for women alone, or what? What is that?
My group is for women. I do have a Facebook group called Healing Trauma for Women, where I accept any woman into the group that is looking for support, that is looking to meet other women that have been in, you know, their shoes or have similar backgrounds, have similar trauma, where they can meet and support each other. And if they want to connect with me, because in the group I go live and offer, you know, free tools and resources and learnings and education for them, for the group. And then they can get a hold of me, of course, through the group and through Messenger, through Facebook. But I also have I have a website that I can be reached at, www.asfreeasyousee.com, and that's my website where I can get a hold of directly. My story is on there. Some of my blogs are on there. Some of the free resources are on there that I provide, and that's where I can be reached at either one of those places.
Okay. Why don't you repeat that other one? It was www.freeascanbe. Is that what you said?
It's as free as you see.
Oh, as free as you see. Okay. All right.
Yes.
So that's good for, you know, I like people to repeat it a couple times so that if they don't get it the first time, they'll get it the second time. And we're always looking, you know, many people are always looking for, you know, blogging is fine. It's wonderful. A lot of times people, you know, do blog because they don't want to write a book, you know, they want to blog.
Right.
And it's amazing, yeah, what comes out. You know, when you sit down and you start to put the pen to the paper, as I say it, what comes out? Because all of a sudden, you know, I'm sure you can identify with this. I wrote a book, but I didn't blog. But still, no flashbacks can happen while you're doing that. Things can happen because when you're looking backwards, yeah, you think you know it all, and then you sit down and you're writing, and all of a sudden, oh yeah, that happened too.
Yeah.
You know, oh, yeah,
yeah,
this happened too. Yeah. What do you do? I mean, how do you feel when I'm asking you as a person, how personally, if have you come across that, you know, all of a sudden a new thing will come to you. Maybe it's a new awareness of abuse or whatever.
It doesn't feel good, that's for sure. The last time it actually happened was probably about like six, eight weeks ago. And I was actually in the shower, and I don't even remember how or what it had been triggered or brought up, but I was doing a lot of healing as far as having those memories and those flashbacks come up. And I just remember just crying and letting it release because, you know, now I've gotten really good with being able to sit with my emotions and be okay with the uncomfortable emotions. So I just, you know, let myself cry it out no matter how bad it sucked. And then I had been very open with my boyfriend about what had happened in my past and that I was having triggers and things like that. So, you know, I when I got out of the shower, I just went to him and started crying. And he tells me, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I'm just going to be here for you. And I'm like, you know, that's enough. That's all that I need. I can process this on my own. I just need to cry it out right now. And it doesn't feel good. I mean, it doesn't matter to me how far along I've gotten on my healing journey. Having those flashbacks or those memories come in, it doesn't feel good. It really sucks. So I just let it suck and release it, and then I let go of it. I usually journal about it later. I'm a huge fanatic about journaling, and I usually journal about it later, and then it just kind of lets go. As long as I let myself go through the cycle of that emotion and let it release, it will be gone within a day usually.
Now I understand that. It's just the fact that he's there, though, is good for you. It's good for anyone. Because when you have these flashbacks that come back, these things that come, you know, you're blogging, all of a sudden, boom, you know, that hits you in the head. Whoa, I remember something.
Yeah.
It's coming through. You know, you need not to be alone, or you need someone that you can contact. That's one thing NASCA is very, very good. Again, I mentioned earlier about the contact page. Most of us have had flashbacks and nightmares. I had terrible nightmares. And quite frankly, I got really mad at them too. And I told a few choice words of those nightmares, and they went away. They actually did. I think I scared my nightmare away. But because I don't have them anymore. But you know, it's amazing what people go through when we're children. We come from dysfunctional homes, and some of us end up out on the street. I was told to run away. I did. I ended up on the street. I didn't care. I was treated better there than I was at home. Okay. Didn't have to worry about my stupid brother, all right? So, you know, the people just don't care so many times, you know, even in the family unit. They'd rather not address it. They don't want to address it. It's too big for them. They don't want to cause problems in the family and all this other stuff, so they keep their mouth shut. And like what Bill was talking about, well, his abuse wasn't in his family. It was, you know, by the priest outside of the family. But he tried to say and, you know, talk about it. But, you know, I'm sure the people didn't want to hear it either. And he wouldn't tell his parents so until much later on. And because they were so, so, so religious, so, so, so Catholic. My mother was an atheist. And I didn't have any baptism or anything like that until I was quite older, much older. And I followed the Catholic side of the family, which was my so-called bio side. Again, I didn't find out until quite late in life where, you know, that my father wasn't my father. So I still looked at them as my family. So anyway, I followed the Catholic religion. But as it turned out, a lot of them made fun of the priests and the nuns, and they'd say none of this and none of that, and they'd say, I know that there's all kinds of things going on. And so they weren't devout Catholics, let's put it that way. You know, they were just Catholics. But still, no, I couldn't talk to them either about what was going on. It's very hard for a child you know, to try and figure out who to talk to, because if you're not listened to at home or you're afraid to speak at home, well, then who does a child go to? You know, so they end up holding all of this stuff in. And either the mind splits and you have, you know, like, you know, in the old days they called MVP or dissociation or whatever like that today, and DID and all this. But, you know, and that's like a protective thing for the mind because it's releasing things, you know, very slowly. And it's very good, and people out there who are listening will agree with this, and if they don't know it, they should know it now, because I'm going to tell them, you need someone to talk to when, you know, you all of a sudden have a new memory. So at least you have your boyfriend that you're able to go to. Is this the guy that you're thinking about? It's not the right relationship, or...
Yeah, so, yeah, we actually are in the middle of a breakup, and so... So it's not the right guy, but you know, at the time, I didn't know that. So, I needed him to be there, and that's what matters at that point in time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's good not to be alone. Is my point. And then,
right. Yes.
You know, and you're young yet. You're only 34 years old, for God's sake. You know, you'll find Mr. Wonderful out there, I'm sure. You know, I'm sure you will. And hopefully, you know, again, many times because of domestic violence, people like myself, I chose poorly 2 times. And I don't want to be married anymore. No, I went through. That's enough for me, honey. No, I've seen enough. And what I want is to have, you know, like a boyfriend, say, 3 times a week or 4 times a week, and he can stay in his home and I'll stay in my home but go out and have a good time and come back, eat some popcorn, watch movies, and whatever happens, happens, as long as we love each other and all this stuff, you know. That's fine with me. But I don't want anyone, you know, like on my back all the time, you know, that I can't handle that. So I don't know if that's because of the relationships that, you know, that I have gone through throughout my life, or if it's just the way that I've turned into. I haven't decided yet. I really don't know. I have my cat, you know, so I'm happy with my cat. Bill has his dog and a wife now. Yes, he does. So he's happy. And, you know, a lot of us have, I need space.
Mm-hmm.
I need to have a relationship, but also have space. But when you're a child, you need to have love. That's what you need. And so many of us are, you know, didn't get the love that we so well deserved. We just simply didn't. And you know, it's a very, very sad thing to not have that love, to not be able to go to a family member and say, "Hey, this is what's happening." And then two. And this is the case of many people. If you finally do get it through their heads or someone's head in the family, then they don't want any part of you, okay? They think you're lying, and, you know, they push you away, and all of a sudden, you know, they act like you're the oddball, and how dare you talk about stuff like this now, and all these other things. And that's a very hard hurdle to get over, too. It is not easy telling, but it is better to tell. And it is better because you don't want that nut walking the streets, okay? Mm-hmm. Whoever has abused you deserves, you know, to be turned in. I don't care how old you are. I mean, the laws are getting a little bit better now. I'm sure you know this, that, right. You know, in some states you can turn your abuser in, and it's okay. It's all right to do that. And there's an event coming up on the 27th. I'll see if I can make it. And by the way, Bill, that was the first one that I was outside 5 or 6 years ago with Sandy in Hunterdon County with that Sheriff Bullock. And I will say it on air because he wants people to go. There's a lot of people want to, the abusers now, the ones who have been abused, rather, from the abuser, are asking for people to gather around. And, you know, to talk about it and so forth. And that's in Belvedere, New Jersey, and I believe that's on the 27th of April. So anyway, the point is this. It's good to tell. We don't need people to get away with it. Unfortunately, this individual I'm speaking about was 84 years old, and he died. But they mm-hmm. should be turned in as soon as we know, okay, and so that it can be addressed. And only God knows how many people he abused. He was 84 when he died, all right? And, you know, that's just the way it is. We want these people off the streets. We want them getting help if there is help available, if they can be helped. We do know that teenagers, if you catch them in time, and believe me, there are teenage abusers. There are. They may not, they'll hide it. They'll, they won't, this is what my brother did to me. I can speak freely. I'll speak freely. He was a teenager, and I was 5 years younger than he. And he was molesting me all the time, and then finally by the time I was 14, he raped me. Oh, yes, he did. And, you know, but he was going out with girls, too, his own age. So he preferred, though, younger, all right? But to look normal to his peers, he went out with, you know, girls his own age. Mm-hmm. And he got married twice, and he, too, didn't marry well. You know, and he got into trouble anyway. So anyway, so the point is this. Anyone out there, if you know of a child who's being abused, for God's sake, do something about it. Make a phone call. Either call someone locally or call the 1-800-4-CHILD number. And we've had them on the show now, Bill. You know this three times, maybe four times now, because they are a part of Child Help, and they have a wonderful hotline service. And then they're full of action. They won't just sit there. They'll help you. So, I mean, I know of them. And there might be others. I know of Child Help, and that's the 1-800-4-A-CHILD number. So that's a part of prevention. And that's something that I want so badly for people to understand about prevention, how important it is. Because if we can help prevent these things from happening just by turning people in, getting them off the streets, then we've done our job, and we've done a good job, because that child needs help. Okay, we only have about 2 minutes left. Is there something of hope that you can offer people? I always turn it over to the person, the guest, if there's one final thing that you'd like to say. Go ahead.
Yes. The healing journey will not be easy, but it will always be worth it. And no matter what anybody has been through, it is possible to anything and everything and live the life that you want to live.
That's right. And hear, hear, we believe that. We know this. It's not a matter of even believing
yes.
it. We know this on this show. We're survivors here. We're thrivers. We're activists. We do whatever we can because of the pandemic. It's not the way that it was. We can't go out and do our presentations, but you know what? We can continue to write our books. We do our music. You know, we do whatever we can do. And another thing, the website, www.nasca.org, nasca.org. You can make copies. Go to stores. I always encourage people to do that. Ask permission first. Most stores have bulletin boards. Pop one up there. You see something like the 10 ways that a child can be abused, the 10 signs, you'll find that. And you know, if you go to the website, you'll find it. Open them up. And that's a good thing. That way it doesn't shock people. It's not like a shock type thing, but it educates them, things to look for. Okay, you can do it in stores. You can do it at daycare centers. I've done it. It works. It helps. And I want to thank you so much for being on this show. You are now a NASCA member. Yes, you are. And
you're proud
and tall. Yes, you can call in anytime you want, Monday through Friday, any show you want to hear, you call in. And you will see, you know, that we are very dedicated people, and we can always use panelists. People who are not afraid to call in, okay? Okay. You know, and yeah. And now we only have 60 seconds. So I have to end the show. I want to thank the people who called in tonight and very, very much appreciated. And remember, we do need those panelists. They have good questions. They bring up good points. So thank you, Roberta. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Adrian. Thank you for calling in. And all I can say now is good night. God bless. And we'll be back again on Monday with another show. Goodbye now.
Goodbye. Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you.
Blog Talk Radio.